Have you lost yourself in your marriage, fallen into self-doubt, insecure and uncertain of your own viewpoints? If you've disappeared behind the shadow of your partner's personality, the Reclaim Your Mind mini course will help you understand how you got here and the exact steps needed to regain control of your life. Go to jbddivorcesupport.com/reclaimyourmind and get started today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
The very first phase is crisis. It's usually called Discovery Day or D-Day. It's that moment when you realize this is something horrible and the world that you thought that you had is no longer the same. There's been secretiveness and deceit happening.
The next phase is stabilization.
Stabilization could be the next 6 months to 5 years or plus. The stabilization phase is the part where the partner goes into counseling and the betrayer goes into counseling, and they consistently work side by side doing their own therapies. At the end of stabilization phase, everything is out on the table, and then it becomes the partner's turn to make a decision. That last phase, you truly have to be able to be open to, what did I not do? That's called post-traumatic growth. What did you learn to become resilient for these kinds of situations?
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. We're talking about broken vows today, facing sexual infidelity and making the tough choices with my guest, Cheryl Camarillo. Welcome to an incredibly poignant episode where we delve into the heart-wrenching world of sexual infidelity and betrayal. Today we explore not just the pain, but the profound decisions that come in the aftermath, whether to mend the bond or part ways. Joined by a renowned infidelity expert, we'll provide you with both professional insights and compassionate advice to navigate these turbulent waters. How do you cope when trust is shattered by infidelity? What steps can you take if you find out your spouse struggles with sex addiction? This episode is a crucial guide for anyone facing these daunting questions. We'll discuss coping mechanisms, the dynamics of forgiveness and trust, and the complex decisions about your future, together or apart. Stay tuned as we embark on this journey toward healing and understanding. But before we dive in, a little bit about my guest. I'm joined today by Cheryl Camarillo, a licensed clinical social worker with over 30 years of dedicated service in the field of mental health. Since 2018, Cheryl has specialized in sex therapy and addiction, driven by both professional expertise and personal experience. With a deep commitment to her mission, Cheryl focuses on supporting women who are navigating the complexities of sexual addiction. Her passion is fueled by a blend of her extensive knowledge and her own personal journey through similar challenges. With no further ado, welcome Cheryl.
Hi, Karen. Hi.
It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. This is a really important topic.
It sure is, and especially for this audience.
I always like to start with how my experts got into the field that they're in. So I have a double question for you. Mm-hmm. How did you get into social working? And then what made you decide to specialize in sex therapy?
Well, the social work part came because I'm a natural born helper. When I was very young, I really wanted to become a doctor because I thought I could help people, but I couldn't handle the science and the chemistry. And then somebody said, take a social work class. And I thought, somebody can get paid to help people. So I was like, sign me up. And so I started my journey for social work and started working originally with children that have been sexually abused and have steadily just moved my way up through a variety of experiences, lots of work in trauma, and finally landing me in this place where I'm doing the work with sex addiction and sex therapy.
Beautiful. And can you share a little bit about your own personal backstory as we delve into this issue?
Sure. I originally enjoyed working with people, just helping them, because I felt like sex is such a serious topic and some people make it uncomfortable and difficult. But in 2018, I found out that my husband was using pornography in addition to his other addictions. He had alcohol and some other things. And I really had to set a limit and I had to ask for a separation because I had a 10-year-old daughter living in my house and she couldn't be exposed to something like that. It was a really hard decision because we'd only been married 2 years. Sorry, this gets emotional, but that's why I do this, because this is hard for every woman that has to deal with something like this, has to make a decision. Do I stay? Do I go? And so I was just determined that I was going to figure out a way to help this man that I thought had lots of positive qualities. I mean, I fell in love with him. I did him. I thought I had everything taken care of, but you can't always plan for the unplanned. And this was one of those things.
I believe every listener is nodding their head right now.
Yeah.
So if they're on this podcast, they're saying, yep, I hear you. So yeah. I'm so sorry that you went through that. And how old is your daughter now?
She's 19.
Okay. All right. So let's dive into this topic a little bit. Offline, you were saying that there's actually a couple of phases a relationship goes through when the awareness of betrayal comes to light. So let's start there.
So the very first phase, so there's three, the very first phase is crisis. It's usually called Discovery Day or D-Day. And it's that moment when you realize this is something horrible and the world that you thought that you had is no longer the same. There's been secretiveness and deceit happening and you've been going through your life thinking everything has been, you know, pretty normal. And then all of a sudden something pops up and it could be anything. It could be, like in my case, it was pornography. In other people's cases, it could be that their husband's having an emotional affair, or maybe there's actually a truly physical affair with multiple women. There's just a variety of different ways that somebody establishes connections with other people outside of their relationship. And it's extremely painful. And so then you end up with a lot of trauma. In the old days, they used to not pay attention to the women in these relationships and just strictly focus on the person with the problem. But what nobody understood was that this problem is so damaging and so abusive to women, because who they thought they were and what their life was like is shattered. And so that's where you come in and say, okay, what do I do? This is, if it's a fire, you know, call 911 fire department. If you have an affair, like, what do? You start looking around, usually on the internet, you Google your friend. So you're Googling up all this information. You're getting podcasts and webinars and going to meetings and reading every book that there is out there. But the number one thing to look at is finding somebody that's skilled at being able to give you all that information in a nice, organized way. And that would be someone like a therapist or a coach.
So I've coached a number of people who had this situation, and that gut punch, that like complete shock and overwhelm. Let's just stay there for a few minutes. In your experience, that initial shock,
How long does that take? What's the impact that has on an individual? Let's start with that.
So I would say that every person is unique with a unique situation. And so you might be the person that's been married for 40 years and didn't know something was going on for 20 years. That one's going to take a lot longer than maybe other people, just because it's a whole life that they have to figure out how to either fix or how to move on. So there's two choices there. Do I stay or do I go? And, you know, if it's somebody that's been dating their boyfriend for a year and all of a sudden realize he's been dating three other women, that one might be that I need to go and see a therapist so I can understand about boundaries and how to look for cues for healthy relationship. So it just depends.
And what's the difference between, I realize we might bounce around a little bit here, but what's the difference between my husband had an affair? My husband has had multiple affairs over multiple years. And I'm saying husband, although we have men and women, and obviously both can cheat. My spouse has a sex addiction. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the sex addiction. I know about the 12 steps. I understand addiction. I read some of your stuff, so I know that there are similarities. But could you just define and elaborate a little bit on sex addiction? And maybe if that's a spectrum as well, what that range looks like to our audience?
Sure. Usually it's a woman that will come in and or they'll call me and say, I need help. But they're usually just calling for their partner, their husband, their spouse. And they'll say, I think my partner is a sex addict. And I'll have to encourage them to come in so I can have this discussion. Because if anything, you want to make sure that you're getting all the information that you need. If they're a sex addict, under addiction means it's out of control and you can't stop that. For many of the spouses that have a sex addiction, they know that it's causing harm and pain to someone else, but they also know that they're telling themselves, I can't stop. So they have a whole line of messages that they're telling themselves to help them justify why they continue to use this behavior. So that's what we're looking at. It's like, is it something that they're actively choosing? Some people will say it's like an illness. It's like alcohol addiction. They need to be able to detox away from it. They need to be able to go to meetings and things like that. A person with an affair has made a decision to step outside of a relationship. And that might be like a, I want to get divorced or I want to separate, but I don't know, but I'm going to go ahead and try this other thing over here. And that might be the one and only time that they step outside of a true connected relationship that they thought they had and form a connection with someone else.
Right. So that's not a sex addiction. But the first one is, I heard you say before that your spouse was involved with pornography. So that's one way a sex addict receives their supply. Mm-hmm. Is it fair to imagine that some sex addicts have multiple affairs?
Yes.
Can you just give us a picture of what is sex addiction? It could be pornography. What are the other things it could be?
So other forms of sex addiction could be that they are on all of the dating websites, making connections with a bunch of other women. Other choices would be that they're actually paying online to talk and meet with other women and exchange videos and things like that for money. There are some people that say, I have to go to escorts. So they're going to escorts once a week and spending thousands of dollars without their partner even realizing that they're spending their family budget on sex acts. Maybe they're going to gentlemen's clubs repeatedly, and it's just something that they do. And you know, their partner is like, where's my husband? I don't know where he's at. And he's over at the gentleman's club, which he goes to every Thursday in the afternoon or something like that. So
I find it interesting that they call it a gentleman's club.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But I digress. So this is interesting. So there could be paid online. There could be paid in person. There could be going to these clubs and getting dances and what have you. So that's one chunk. And then there's the individual who has an affair, which is different from the individual, I would imagine, that has multiple affairs over multiple years. Would you put that individual in the sex addiction category or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, but I would. I would use a lot of the skill set that I've gained from working with sex addiction, because I would want to make sure I explored the area of attachment and understanding the levels of intimacy for couples. I like to work with the couples together when it comes to an affair, especially if the partners have decided we want this relationship to move forward. So then I have to help them understand if honesty and trust are not there, if there's not safety for the partner, if there's not a connection and attachment. All of those things are about intimacy on the highest level. And that's the ultimate component that you want in a relationship, is physical, emotional, spiritual, social, all the different forms of intimacy, that you 100% trust that person with everything in your life and they do the same for you.
Now, my experience has been that some people kind of talk themselves into staying. And so, which makes sense. I can't believe this happened. You know, they said they won't do it again. But there's all that healing. I mean, that's like, can you just talk a little bit for the hurt partner? That's such a depth of betrayal, right? I mean, you're talking to an audience who are going through a high conflict divorce. And so there's, of course, the betrayal of verbal and physical and emotional abuse. Can you talk a little bit about the impact that level of betrayal has on an individual?
It's tremendous. Like, there can be so many physical things that that a person gets impacted with, as far as like health issues, because the stress response can cause this running down of your basic organ systems, and then things don't want to function as well. You start using some behaviors for coping that are not healthy for yourself. So maybe you're overeating, undereating, maybe you're overexercising. Maybe you're withdrawing and getting depressed. Maybe you're isolating yourself away from your friends and family. There's so many things that happen. It's just like if it was a true trauma, like associated with a hurricane, like life was one way today and then a storm comes and everything is gone. And now you have to figure out what just happened. And then where am I supposed to go now?
Right, right. And I would imagine that while the betrayer may feel shame, that the hurt partner can feel shame as well, can't they?
Shame, guilt, you know, did I cause this? Was I not sexy enough? Did I not provide enough sex? Do I need to start offering that more often? There's just so many things that it's like a little hamster wheel. It's constantly going. And that's the hardest part. If I see somebody coming in, I really feel for the pain that person is experiencing, because nobody told them it's okay to shut your brain off and it's okay to do some self-care. And that's like my number one intervention when they first come in. It's like, let's just talk. I'm going to listen. I'm not going to judge. I'm going to acknowledge anything that you say. If I feel like you need guidance, I'm going to give that to you. And that is so comforting. You can see that when their body language just relaxes, when their face muscles get, you know, kind of like a little bit more lax, and they start telling you all kinds of things. And I mean, it could be that I've tried three other therapists and they blamed me, or my husband's family is all mad at me now. And even my mother says, I love your husband more than I love you. I've heard that before. It's horrible.
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device. So I want to get back, now that we have a foundation of understanding, I want to get back to your three stages. So stage one is crisis. And you're saying someone in a 40-year marriage with someone who's been cheating for years and maybe with multiple women or people is one thing. So that crisis phase, it sounds like the time frame varies depending on the situation. Mm-hmm. What do you cover? What is covered for... And let's just stay with the hurt partner for a minute. Mm-hmm. what's covered during that crisis stage? I'm hearing self-care and just giving them a chance to dial down, turn off their monkey mind, feel, take care of themselves. What else?
Safety. You have to go in and reestablish. Have you been physically kept safe? Like, do you have any kinds of STDs that might have come out of this? So it's safety. It's, you have a lot of intense emotions. So there's like anger and mood swings. There's also just depression and you can't function. You're supposed to go to work and still be able to do your job. It doesn't work like that in that crisis
your
period.
World just...
Yeah, you can barely breathe. Yeah. In that crisis period, you feel like I can't breathe. And there might be tears or you might be frozen because you're in the fight or flight or you're in the frozen. And you want to get out of that. That's where the next phase comes in.
And I would imagine in that phase, I'm sure I'm simplifying this. You can, of course, add a whole lot of nuance. But your partner is either going to be defensive, and I read your article on lies and lying, or they're going to be contrary and probably a lot of things in between. So let's just add that level. How does that play into it for that hurt partner?
So if the hurt partner and the betrayer comes across as intensely controlling and angry, the abuse is continuing. And this woman can't take a deep breath, can't get herself corrected in a healthy path because he's continuously disrupting any efforts that she's making to be able to stand and feel like she's getting balance again. His goal is keep her off balance so she stops looking at what I'm doing so he can continue to act out. There's the contrite ones who are very upset, very overwhelmed, can't believe that they caused the amount of pain that they've caused for their partner. It makes it really hard for the woman that's angry to look at their partner and watch him crying when you just want to beat him up and you can't because he's sitting there crying. So.
Oh, and is that crying sometimes authentic and sometimes manipulative, or is that usually authentic?
Yeah, there are two types of criers. There are the poor me, and that is still entitlement there. And right. Then there's the other one that's like, I have screwed up
so
her
badly.
Life. If he's able to say I screwed up her life, right. Then he's not thinking about himself. But if he says I screwed up my life and she might leave me, that's all he's focused on is the him. Then yeah, that's not somebody that's moving out of the crisis phase yet.
So I think that as we're chatting, we could probably talk for a couple of hours on this is what I'm realizing. And I'm thinking of all the rabbit holes I can take you down. So I don't want to do that. But let's just say in the crisis, if you have a situation where the hurt partner really wants to mend this, it's like, I got a lot of years, we got kids, I love this man, I didn't realize this, I want to get over it. But the betrayer is that controlling or fake contrite. Like when you have someone like that, and you can see that the hurt partner is actually deluding themselves, like they so strongly want to fix it. What do you do in a case like that?
You've been listening to our podcast, Getting Educated, Regulating Your Emotional Reactions, and it's been really helpful. Yet you know you could do better, be better, and you're wanting and needing more support. That's where our coaching service is a game changer. We're here for you when you need us the most, ensuring you have all the tools and resources at your fingertips, guiding and supporting you to be more effective. Our free rapid relief call helps you gain a broader perspective, commit to your best next steps, and determine what coaching support is right for you. Visit rapidreliefcall.com to book your call today.
I think my first priority is always going to be the partner. And so I will do everything that I can to help strengthen the partner so that they feel, I want to improve self-esteem, self-confidence, self-worth. And if those kinds of things get built up, then they're more ready to have a conversation about what's truly happening in the relationship and what's not supposed to be happening in the relationship.
Yeah. And for those listening who are really resonating with this, I think that is such an important piece of it, that to have somebody who's so empathetic, compassionate, and skilled to help rebuild the self-esteem. And that's what I'm hearing you say. They may want to go back. That's less your concern than them rebuilding so that they can think more clearly, make good decisions, have those hard conversations. Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So let's move on then, even though I know we barely scratched the surface of crisis. You said the next stage or phase is stabilization. Can you define that?
Stabilization could be the next 6 months to 5 years or plus. It just depends on how deep the addiction pattern is and how much work needs to be done in the couple to rebuild, if it does need to be rebuilt. But the stabilization phase is the part where the partner goes into counseling for herself and the betrayer goes into counseling for his issues. And they consistently work side by side doing their own therapies. And if they're lucky, they might find a therapist that knows how to do couples work with them as they're simultaneously going through their therapy so that you can build some healthier communication skills. You're not going to be doing couple counseling, but you're going to be able to do things like have boundaries and limits between each other and be able to confront without fear of having some kind of emotional or reignition of crisis, because that can happen in stabilization. So,
what does that mean, reignition of crisis?
You can have a crisis and then everything calms down. People are doing what they need to. And maybe you hear something, maybe the partner hears something or sees something and it reminds her of, you know, past behaviors, and she gets extremely upset and screaming, throws him out of the house. That could be another crisis. Or it could be that he forgot to tell her about that fifth one that he had an affair with. And so then you're in crisis all over again. We call that a dripping disclosure. You're finding out things one piece at a time, and it's very painful.
I was going to say, what is the impact of that? So you've shown me all your dirty laundry. I'm processing it. I'm moving on. And then like another name drops and another person drops. I can't even imagine.
Like multiple hurricanes hitting the same house. You can't ever rebuild it.
So in the stabilization process, each partner is doing their own work and they're also doing some couples work together. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you get to a point, which is, so now what? So hopefully we're at a fight, flight, or freeze. Everyone's working on themselves. Talk to us a little bit about that reconnection or separation phase.
At the end of stabilization phase, everything is out on the table, hopefully. All the cards are placed out there, and then it becomes the partner's turn to make a decision. I have a lot invested in this relationship. I truly love this person. I understand the underlying reasons for this person having gone through what he did, and I'm willing to give him another chance. And then there's the other side, which is I'm stronger now. I don't see him making as many changes as he needs to, so I don't feel too safe. And I think I need to start moving on to some other place and actually pursue some separation or divorce.
Right. And can you tell us a little bit more about the nuance of, I mean, that's right here, the rubber meets the road. Those are really hard decisions to make on the tail of such a hard awareness and experience.
I see some women struggle for a year. Usually it's their children that they're thinking of, like, we need to stay together. I need to give him a chance. And then after a year, realizing that the patterns don't seem to be breaking, that even if he's not actively cheating, the interactions, the communication style, everything continues to be very self-focused on the betrayer's part. And the partner's feeling neglected and uncared for, not nurtured, doesn't feel like they're being heard, always feels like they're in the wrong. If you're in that kind of a situation, then it's probably not going to get too much better.
Yeah, no, that sounds so difficult. So I think I'm hearing you say here is, after this terrible crisis happens, the best case scenario is for the hurt partner to focus on themselves, rebuild their self-esteem, find their voice, begin to create like a life, and then pay very close attention to what's real about their partner's behavior and be honest with themselves. I think what I hear you saying is if somebody is doing their own work and is really honest about the other party, that's going to really help them make that decision to stay or go.
Yeah.
So I want to throw a little bit of an interesting scenario in here. Let's take sex addiction off the table for a second. So somebody who goes out of the marriage is making a really poor decision of how to handle whatever's going on with the marriage. What do you see happen when they've gotten to that stage of stabilization and the betrayer is a good person? They're trying to do the right thing. They're trying to mend. But they are also saying, our marriage has, before I did this, we had issues and I want the issues addressed. I would imagine it's very hard for the hurt partner to start to go down that path because it's like, I'm hurt. I'm not going to talk about how my communication isn't good. Like, can you just talk a little bit about what happens when that tender issue of, and I want to be clear to the audience, I'm not suggesting for a hot second that the betrayer had good reason to go out. It was a really poor way of handling a marital problem. But how do you then make sure that the marital problem is addressed? And because it's such a tender and spiky kind of situation.
I would say if I had somebody here and I was checking to see, are they ready for the third phase, which is the actual rebuilding of the relationship?
Right.
I would have to see that she felt like she had gone through all of her issues. She'd gotten herself stronger. She worked on even her past issues, because sometimes we bring baggage into our relationships.
I would say always.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've had several bags in my relationship.
Lots of luggage.
And I try to keep that covered up for about 2 years, but that stuff just keeps leaking out. So I have to take care of those things, go get my own counseling, go do my own work to look at some of the stuff that happened to me, like what makes me such a passive person or what makes me the super compliant woman. You know, it can go back to something in fourth grade or whatever, which is why I do some of the things that I do and the therapies that I've learned to do, because the fact that some things can just pop up and clear your life issues up on a variety of levels, it's so freeing. But when I'm seeing a situation where I'm like, okay, are they ready to go to the stage three where they work on rebuilding the marriage, or they're working on maybe I just need to leave, I have to see that the woman or the partner that's been betrayed is feeling like they have their mind balanced and they can make good decisions, that they're problem solving, that they're not doing something knee jerk out of reaction, but that it's well thought out. Like, it's true problem solving instead of reactive. It's intentional, well thought out problem solving about this relationship and what's going to be in the best interest of her and of him and any family members that are involved. And yeah, so that last phase is true. You truly have to be able to be open to, what did I not do in this relationship? And I'm not saying we need to kick the dog. We need to do something that's just truly, what skills do you need? We want to make this as strong as possible.
Yeah. So I think what I'm getting is when you get to that phase of reconnection or separation, it's almost like the playing field has been leveled.
Yes.
The hurt partner has rebuilt themselves up. The betrayer has done the right thing in terms of therapy and their efforts at reconciliation and what have you. And so then in that third phase, I'm hearing that there can be really honest conversations about, if we're going to stay together, what wasn't working in the past and how do we start addressing that so that we can be our best selves going forward? Am I hearing that?
Yeah, that's called post-traumatic growth. What did you learn to become resilient for these kinds of situations? So
beautiful. Are there any statistics on how many marriages actually reconcile versus end in divorce when sexual betrayal is at the core?
I wish I could give you those numbers, give you an observation that if I have 100 couples that come in, probably 20 of those will automatically get themselves weeded out just because they're tired and they do not want to continue to live a life of crisis and chaos. And then there's some that will continue pushing forward, looking for change, changing themselves. And then there's the last group that's like, we really appreciate and love all parts of each other, and we can truly understand where some of this acting out behavior came from, and also what needs to happen to make sure that there's mutual respect between both. So
as we begin to wrap up, if you were to leave our listeners with a couple of tips or strategies, if they're in a situation where they're recently, or maybe not so recently, facing infidelity, if they're listening to this podcast, they've either decided to leave or they're at least thinking about it, how would you guide them?
I want to let you know that I've prepared a little gift for your audience. Basically, my first goal is always calm the nervous system down. So I want to see peace and calm for any women that are struggling in this area or any male. And so I've put together a peace and calm meditation, hypnotherapy, 17-minute thing for me to provide to you so that you can let your audience have that.
We will have in the show notes the link that you can click to receive the 17-minute hypnotherapy meditation called Peace and Calm After Betrayal. That is so kind and generous of you. And just, are there any other beautiful gift? Are there any other just pieces of advice you would want to leave our audience with before we say goodbye, who are in that situation?
It's intensely painful and hurtful. But when I see people come out on the other side and I see that strong woman who's making decisions for herself and possibly for the couple, it's just really rewarding just to see that strong person, especially women are strong. They do all the research. They give 150%. When they come in here, I can expect 150% from women.
Yeah. And so I just want to say, I'm so sorry you're experiencing this, if that's you. And I would agree with Cheryl. I think that there's a resilience that comes out of crisis, just like with the other high conflict issues that we deal with. There can be resilience and there can be a new chapter and a new sense of self and a new level of self-esteem and belief in oneself. I think it's really important that you said something earlier. This is your specialty. And so we talked offline a little while ago that you were saying local therapists were actually coming to you. So I guess my last question will be, the value of finding somebody who specializes in betrayal and sex therapy versus somebody who's more of a generalist, what would you say about that?
I guess it's not intentional, but it can cause a lot more emotional turmoil to have someone look at you and you're believing that you're seeing judgment. I had somebody yesterday tell me that her therapist said she needed to find another therapist because if she didn't leave her husband, she couldn't work with her anymore. And I was like, it's just not good.
That would be bad.
That's very bad. But on top of that, that's shaming.
That's shaming. So if this is your position, and God forbid, if you have a therapist that you feel like, well, they're my therapist, they know better, and they are being judgmental or shaming or anything other than holding space and being utterly compassionate and having some good tools to guide you to rebuild yourself, you might want to find yourself an expert in the field. And are there any places where one can just, is there, I always go to Psychology Today, but is there any place that you recommend people go to search for a local specialist in their area?
I recommend the International Trauma Association for Addiction, so ITAP. There's another group called APSAT, which is coaches that specialize in betrayal trauma. Very, very skilled. And then there's CSATs. So the CSATs are certified sex addiction therapists who are very aware of what the sex addict or the person with the sex issue, the problematic sexual issue is doing. So they can call them on their behavior instead of tippy-toeing around things like maybe the partner had to do. So
Cheryl's going to give me a bunch of links that you now can, because you're listening, are in the show notes now. So if this is you, check out the show notes. There'll be some links in there and you can do some research based on that. Cheryl, thank you so much for what you do in the world. What a beautiful calling that you have. And I appreciate you. And I am so grateful that you would come and speak to my audience today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen, for having me. This is a passion area for me. And I know it's your passion area too.
Yeah. So folks, we'll be back again with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified real soon. Until then, you take care.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women through our one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.